Hashtag Karajan. These are the big letters every visitor sees instantly. I'm Sandra Voss, and we are here in Salzburg at the second Karajan Tech Conference. Walking around, we noticed instantly. It's not a huge, but very familiar, informal atmosphere. Guests are entrepreneurs, artists, and scientists. This is a one-day conference dedicated to classical music and technology. And by the way, Herbert von Karajan himself was truly a visionary. He was enormously interested in the possibilities of technology as well as what could be possible in the future. Today, topics here will be, for example, media and the future of automotive. We experience the future of intelligent music applications in autonomous cars. Will blockchain change the music industry? And another topic, music education and technology. And about this, we will be talking to our first guests. We are very much looking forward to talking to David Bahanowicz. He is a London-based American cellist, deeply committed to higher education. He is assistant director of music at Trinity Laban Conservatoire, definitely one of UK's most innovative conservatoires. So nice to have you here, David. Hello.
My pleasure.
What's special about this conference here in Salzburg for you?
Well, it's very exciting. There are so many great minds and great thinkers here. I just came from a talk about blockchain, which is and music, which is a very, very innovative subject, and it's the kind of very cutting-edge subjects that we need to discuss in our industry. The industry is undergoing lots of seismic changes, and I was delighted to have an invitation from Matthias Roeder to come and to share with other great thinkers what their thoughts are about the direction of travel for our industry. There are many extraordinary opportunities, but there are also many challenges ahead of us.
And the atmosphere?
The atmosphere is terrific. It's a great buzz, and it's a very fun conference, but it's also a serious conference. So it's a wonderful combination of lots of good-natured conversation, but it's also very, very in-depth, which is what I really appreciate.
And a very familiar atmosphere.
Yes, I mean, this is the first time I've been to Salzburg. It's a beautiful city. I absolutely love it. It's glorious. There was a wonderful reception at the radio television studio last night, which gave me a glimpse of how wonderful the cultural life in Salzburg is. And I'm just delighted to be here.
Some people worry about the future of classical music. And you said today, in many ways, it's classical music's golden period.
Yes, I think it is. I think, and technology is one of the main drivers of innovation in the music industry in general, and especially in the classical music industry. Artists now have the ability to share and to create in ways that were just unimaginable even 10 or 15 years ago. And that is something which I, as assistant director of music at Trinity Laban Conservatoire of Music and Dance, share with all of our students, and the kinds of programs that we develop enable students to really understand the power of technology, which it really enables them to hopefully appreciate that this is indeed a golden time for classical music.
And you also develop more effective teaching structures.
Yes.
Transferring methods from sports.
Yes, we very much are exploring. We're just at the beginnings of this, but we're trying to explore whether the master pupil way of transferring knowledge and teaching music is the most effective way. Because, for example, professional athletes are trained with assistant coaches, with nutritionists, with performance psychologists. And musicians are fundamentally athletes in many ways. And so we're exploring this. It's just the beginning of a journey. And we think that it may be fruitful in time, but it's just the very, very beginnings of this kind of journey, because in order to do that, it requires a real philosophical shift of thinking in the way that we approach the training of young musicians. But we're very hopeful that it might be incredibly useful to students, especially given the very, very changing landscape of the music industry now.
And furthermore, you equip students with skills that are normally not connected to a classical musician, like business qualifications.
Yes, I mean, I can start out with a basic premise, which is that we really feel that that conservatoires can be agents of change, and that the classical music industry can really benefit from the pipeline of talent that comes from conservatoires. And if we really want to change and help the classical music industry to thrive and to take advantage of how society and cultures are working and to engage with other diverse audiences, we need to re-examine how we train young musicians. And conservatoires can be that agent of change which enables it. And that's part and parcel of a larger discussion that we have in how we train young musicians with different skill sets. And the skill sets of 18th and 19th century musicians who improvised, composed, arranged, directed, taught, are in many ways better suited for the skill sets of 21st century musicians.
So for example, Beethoven was a businessman, so was Handel?
Handel was one of the greatest businessmen. He absolutely took advantage of what was necessary when he realized that it was best to compose oratorios instead of operas. Well, then you got lots of oratorios. The sense of entrepreneurialism in great composers of the past was rife. There are many letters of Mozart's father writing to Wolfgang and saying how fantastic it was that he was really businesslike and realizing he could do four concerts that evening if he moved his forte piano around in a very clever way, and all of that, and it's very important to see that in particular entrepreneurship must not be pulled away from what musicians do, but we at Trinity Laban embed that kind of thinking, and we also very much promote that. The specialization that occurred in the 20th century, where for the first time, if you were a violinist, you were just a violinist. Mm-hmm. Or if you were a pianist, you were just a pianist. If you were a violinist in the 19th century, you improvised, you arranged, you had your own additions, you composed. If you were a pianist in the 19th century, you composed, you arranged. Think of all the great composers of the 19th century who were pianists. Liszt, yeah. Chopin, they were all of that. I feel very much that the 21st century requires musicians with a very diverse portfolio of skill sets. And in many ways, we have to return to the past in order to go forward. And going back to your original question about entrepreneurship, it's part of a suite of sort of modules that students take each year. And there are four of them. And they're called The Artist as Citizen is the first year. It's a course class that everyone must take in our Bachelor's in Music program, where we encourage students to look and to see and to have a seat at the civic table and to see what their place is in society. Think about that. In year two, we have something called The Artist as Educator, where we train musicians to work in communities, to work in supporting widening participation, going out and teaching and learning how to do that. In year three, this is where we have the module called The Artist as Entrepreneur. And it's a very serious module where we teach them core business skills. We teach them contracts, marketing, understanding the digital economy. And at their assessment at the end of that year is to create a business plan or a marketing plan, a full-blown one. That business plan and that marketing plan that they create is fed into their final fourth year module, which is called The Artist as Innovator. And there we have a Dragon's Den type funding opportunity for them to take their business plans or marketing plans and to get funding for it. We'll also attach mentors to it from the industry. And a part of that also is how we engage with industry in R&D. We think that conservatoires need to be places of R&D where we can incubate some of the solutions that the classical music industry needs. And for example, one company that we're working with right now. We're beta testing for a company called Encoda. It will be a very well-known household name, I'm sure, in the coming months and years. But it's basically a Spotify for music publishing.
Yeah. And it sounds very exciting and successful because 99% of your students get a job.
Yes, we're very lucky and we're very proud of those statistics. In the UK, the government monitors the employability of students, whether they go off to further education or go into jobs. And we have consistently been in the very, very top, tied with Cambridge and Oxford, for employability of our students. And that, in many ways, is a testament of the fact that we are training students with this multitude of skill sets that enables them to go out into the industry and find those pockets that others can't fill and our students do. So that means that we are training them correctly. And we're very, very proud of that. And it's nice to see data to prove that we're sort of doing something right. It doesn't always work that way, but we're delighted by that. Yeah.
Did you see anything that impressed you very much yet here in Salzburg at the conference? Or wasn't it time enough?
I've seen, as mentioned, some fascinating discussions about automotive musical technology, which is really quite interesting. Where that's going, I thought, is absolutely fascinating. And it's true, if one thinks about where does one listen to music, well, yes, we do listen to it primarily in our cars. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is a fascinating area of exploration. And one wonders, you know, could conservatoire students get involved in R&D in some way in that kind of exploration of those sorts of areas? I mean, why not? But I think I'm just very delighted to be around so many great minds and great thinkers. And I think the success comes from us just talking and sharing our ideas.
So, David, you are, in a way, it seems, ahead in terms of new methods.
I don't want to say that we have the solution. Yeah. I'm saying that we are one solution. But quite simply, the path has to change. And I do feel ardently we cannot train musicians the way that we have trained them for the last 100 years. Yeah. And that is very, very important because, you know, in order for our classical industry to innovate, we have to have musicians with different skill sets coming into the environment. And so within this extraordinary, beautiful, exquisite shell, we are doing all this innovative, cutting-edge curriculum work with our musicians. So it's this wonderful, wonderful, beautiful environment that we have to see that innovation within the walls of this tradition.
Sounds wonderful, interesting, inspiring, and I wish I was a student.
Well...
Yeah. How does it look like at home? Your children, Sasha and Xenia?
Xenia, yes, yeah.
Do they play an instrument or more?
Yes. It's very difficult, you know, being a musician myself. One never wants to be a pushy parent, but they are talented. My daughter Xenia plays the violin, and she's wonderful. She's got a little sort of photographic memory, so when we're working on something, I'll explain to her the piece and how it's organized and structured. And everything, she says, "Okay, Papa, I've got it. Fine, I don't need to look at the music anymore." So, but I wish she just, you know, she's distracted by other things. She's just recently started the harp. I don't know where that will go. And my son Sasha has got an extraordinary boy soprano voice and is constantly singing. But I don't. I just want to be an enabler. One never wants to push, and I think it's most important for music to just enrich their lives.
Nice last words. Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks. 35 million times clips from his shows were watched on YouTube, which means he made 35 million people laugh. Because this man is hilariously funny. And to be honest, it's a rare combination because he's a marvelous violinist. He's also an actor, writer, director, and composer. Alexey Igudisman. Did I pronounce your name right? Hello.
It's completely wrong. Yeah, we'll have to start.
Oh,
everything, everything you said is wrong.
Except, from the beginning. I'm so sorry.
No, of course. Now, you pronounce it marvelously, actually, very, very well. But you kind of left out conveniently, perhaps cleverly, the last thing and the reason why I'm here actually is because I'm also an entrepreneur. And what I'm presenting here, of course, at the tech conference is my newest startup and my
wishes
and my app, Music Traveler. Music Traveler is an app actually in order to be able to book a room with a piano or another instrument at the touch of a button per hour, anytime, anywhere in the world. And we've launched in Vienna. We had the government support from the city of Vienna. And we are now opening in Salzburg. We're actually doing a presentation here at 5 o'clock. And we are we're launching in Germany soon, in Berlin in June, and in the whole of Germany and Switzerland, and very soon worldwide. We want musicians and music lovers to be able to make music anywhere, anytime. In fact, some of the wonderful people who support us are like Hans Zimmer and Billy Joel, who have invested in Music Traveler because they think it's actually going to improve the world of music, and we are pretty sure it will.
What sort of room is it?
Well, just basically any room that has an instrument or not, actually. Okay. A room where you are able to make music, you're able to play. So, for example, we have rooms from private people. We have official rehearsing studios. A bit like in booking.com, you have the ability to book a hotel, and you can see all of the different hotels that exist. With us as well, you just see all of the different rehearsing and practicing possibilities there are in town. So actually you see it very nicely on a map, a bit like, you know, for example, I myself offer my own room with a beautiful Steinway so that somebody can come and practice on it. And it's a beautiful feeling, actually. I even see it as a social movement, because I myself, as a co-founder of Music Traveler, I was kind of thinking, oh my God, what's this going to be like when somebody else comes into your room and to practice? It's a beautiful feeling, actually, because you're opening the room, your apartment for fellow musicians or music lovers who are so appreciative. Of course, you earn a little bit of money through it as well. And also, what important thing is, we have an insurance, so that, you know, the rooms are automatically insured up to 100,000 euros for the instrument. Sometimes people have an audition in a place where they need to go to music school, or we also have people who are booking, who are music lovers, and between two appointments in town, they would love to find just a nice piano to play on. And some people we've had who've never even touched a beautiful Steinway piano, and they were so happy, so appreciative that they're able to do that. And once we've launched worldwide, it will really make sense, because that means musicians never have to suffer anymore. Having the problem of traveling around the world, well, the luxury of traveling around the world and performing everywhere, I encounter that problem very often. I play with a pianist, he needs a piano, we need to rehearse. Where? When? Sometimes it's possible in the venue, but not at the times that you want to have it. Mm-hmm. When you're on holiday, for example, you're traveling, then where do you find a rehearsal room or a practice room? Very, very difficult. And with Music Traveler, this is changing.
Was there an incident that led to the idea?
Actually, funny you say that. Yes, it was an incident with my future ex-wife. You're laughing, but she's a very close friend of mine, and is a lovely, wonderful lady, and a wonderful musician as well. And we wanted to go on holiday. And she said, yeah, but I have concerts. I need to practice for a few. I said, yeah, but we need to get away. It's okay. I'll find you a room to rehearse. And I started searching, and I spent days, if not weeks, searching for places where one can go and book a room with a piano to play on internationally. And this was so complicated as well, because of the language. First of all, Italy, you know, my Italian is so-so. But for example, then she came with me to Hong Kong when I was on tour. And there, you know, I didn't have the language. I finally found a place. My God, you can rent maybe, you know, a practice room. Called there, said, we're all full. So it was really, really, I found it so hard, and I spent so much time on it. Then, of course, my colleague, Hyun Ki Ju, whom I play with, mm-hmm. A lot around the world, as a good as modern Jew, he's always looking for a practice room. I mean, he's like consistently looking for somewhere to play and to practice. Sometimes having to, you know, we come into a new town, he says, I'm off to practice. Like, oh, great. So when will we be back? So like, well, in a few hours, because the place is like half an hour travel away. Whereas I know, I'm sure there's a piano like next door in some home or some studio, but one needs to know. And with Music Trello, with the app, I realized, my God, if we had this possibility, this would change everything for
and it
musicians.
Would also be nice meeting other people. I mean,
absolutely.
Meeting those who rent their room and for them to meet musicians.
Absolutely.
If they are entertaining like you are.
Well, I've had the instance, for example, when I, you know, advertised my room on Music Traveler, people came to my house and they opened the door and they said, oh my God, Alexei Gurusman, I cannot believe it, it's you. Oh my God, I've been to you. You know, kind of said, chill out, don't worry, I'll bring you some water, bring you some biscuits, go practice, enjoy yourself, my home is your home. And, you know, left them in the room with my beautiful Steinway. And it's really lovely. And I had some great talents as well practicing at my place. It's a win-win situation. It's really, really nice socially. And of course, the, you know, other rehearsal studios in Vienna who are very, very happy because they did not have an online booking system.
And can we talk a little bit about Alexei Gurusman, the man.
Well, the man, that sounds like you're going to talk about my sex life.
We
skip that bit. Or later. Or
yeah, we skip it.
Okay.
You were born in Russia.
Yes, at a very young age.
Came to Germany. You speak German.
In Deutsch, like auch in, ja.
Ja. Ja. Sofort. Die ganze Zeit.
Well, we stick to English.
And you also speak German with a Russian accent, which sounds very interesting. I mean,
I can speak English with Russian accent also. It makes no difference. It's how my mother speak after 25 years of being out of Russia. I do use all of those little tricks and sticks in different shows of mine.
And your works were performed by world-class orchestras, just like Chicago Symphony, Seattle Symphony, Kremerata, Baltica.
Yes. I'm very, very lucky that way. Actually, just now, I just heard a premiere of Vadim Repin and Clara Jumikang of a piece for two violins and an orchestra I wrote for them. Which was broadcast on TV. So I'm very lucky. And the big commission, which I'm actually working on right now, so I have no idea what I'm doing here with you. I should be writing.
I'm sorry.
Is coming up very soon. It's actually for the Zurich Tonhalle Orchestra. It's even a whole evening of works. It's two major works, which is going to be on the 1st, 2nd and 3rd of June. With the Tonhalle Zurich Orchestra. One half is something called the Clash of the Soloists, which is essentially a wrestling match between violin and piano concertos. And the other half is a very new, fresh guide to the orchestra called Back to the Orchestra, which is very exciting to write as well.
Your titles sound very promising, just like Big Nightmare Music or
right.
Little Nightmare Music. Does it come in a sort of click to you, or do you have...
Well, ideas have never been my problem. I think I have plenty of ideas for whether it be titles or things. I think the difficulty and the most work is not the ideas, but is actually executing. And it's not just people say, oh, it's important to have dreams, but actually, in a way, it's important to make them reality. And that's what takes the work, and that's where most people, wouldn't say fail, but get a little bit lazy.
And when did the fun begin, sort of? Can I say it like this? I mean, I imagine studying at Mannheim School, the thing was serious. When did you start I guess you were always quite funny, but...
The thing is, I mean, I never understood the serious part about serious music, because it isn't serious. I don't know, some person just decided it's serious at some point. At the beginning, the classical, in German, what says ernste Musik, serious music, at least you know, in England, I think, when calls it classical music, it just used to be music.
In most cases, it is quite serious. I mean, I've been to concerts where people have been told off if they clapped.
Well,
too
exactly.
Early.
Well, the thing is, it's the music is not serious. It's just the whole thing around it is serious and comically so. I mean, it's ridiculous why you can't clap in the wrong place, or you can't laugh in the concert hall and whatever, because fun is an essential part of any type of music, and it used to be in the 17th, 18th, 19th century. Well into the 19th century, it was completely fine to even drink in the concert hall and clap any time. There were famous letters from Mozart to his dad where he said, "Oh my God, what a wonderful public. I started playing, they loved the theme so much, they clapped so much, I had to stop and start again. What joy." He was happy about that. Now, you can hardly imagine that happening these days. Luckily enough, as in our concert in Gutes Manju, we do have a very spontaneous reaction like that, also in the concerts that I try to do. It's a question of re-educating the public, because the public has been educated to be extremely serious. It was through different things. I mean, partly, who is to blame? Schoenberg, maybe. Mahler wanted things pretty serious. But, you know, those are individuals for their type of music, maybe it made sense. Well, Mahler was more like about coughing less during and talking less during the performance, which I do see his point. But, you know, certain types of music requires a certain type of behavior and concentration. But you can't just say in the concert hall, this is how you behave. Not saying that you should like talk during the concert, but you can laugh, you can enjoy it, you can wear what you like. I think those things have to be broken down, and we are trying to, and we have been breaking them down. Yehudi Menuhin himself was a very, very open-minded person. He was the first person to play with, in the classical music world, to play with jazz musicians like Grappelli, with Ravi Shankar from Indian music. He was there. I had lessons from him. He, during lessons, when I was playing to him, he wasn't talking to me about, you know, technique this, technique that. He was talking about some gypsy violinist that he met in India, and he would stand on his head, you know, doing some yoga. He was a big yoga fanatic. Now, these days, I even stand on my head and during performances, so I guess I got that from him. So it was actually much more open-minded school than one would expect.
How did it come about you working together with Hans Zimmer? And it must have been fun, because you've been working several times. Mm. Sherlock, Madagascar, you wrote film music together.
Yeah, we've done many things together. Well, he heard me perform many years ago when I was performing arrangements of mine of Ennio Morricone. I was playing with a trio back then called Triology, and we arranged a whole CD of Morricone, Ennio Morricone works. Morricone himself was there at this performance. He jumped on stage and he was praising us, saying, "Wow, this is such an honor to have these arrangements. It's like, you know, Beethoven writing Diabelli variations." And Hans Zimmer said, "Oh my God, I want that too." So he invited us, and then eventually me, very quite often, to write with him and to arrange and to play on some of those wonderful soundtracks of his. And that was always great, very creative work, because what I love about Hans is that he approaches each film project like from scratch. He never would say, "Okay, well, we're going to do a Batman on that," or it's like, "Oh, that should sound like Pirates of the Caribbean." Just the opposite. He would be like, "Okay, how can we reinvent what film music is with each project?" And that's brilliant, because the beginning is the search for the language, for the musical language. And I think that's such a healthy and creative way of being. So that's why we became also very, very close friends. And you know, through the years, We've toured a little bit together. I was on tour with him when he was doing his crazy world tours, and which went marvelously. I'm so happy for him. I mean, I jumped on stage whenever I could in between my performances, which is a little crazy. And I'm so happy that he is showing his music, because I think also his music is truly music, contemporary music of the 21st century, because I think he is so creative. He digs into the past, and at the same time he tries to create the future through his music, and I think that's where we meet.
And I just happen to see Dunkirk. It's yes. It's have you seen it with his music?
I have
music?
Not seen it yet, but I was
so,
there.
Yeah, it's not music. It's yeah. like an actor.
Right,
the music is an actor.
Yeah, but this is how Christopher Nolan and Hans like to work in this very intense way. In that way, it's of course it's brilliant. I remember from tour actually Hans just disappearing from one of the off days to go to the site where Christopher was shooting Dunkirk in the Bretagne, and it was terrible weather. He said, "Oh my God, what a chaos on set!" But it was amazingly fascinating. And again, you know, this is Hans trying to you know, reinvent himself in many ways. They have a great working relationship as well, because what happens there, they trust each other a lot. So a lot of the time what Christopher has tried to do is he would explain our project to him, and he would show him not even shot footage, but show him more like a page from the script, and said, please write music inspired by this, because I want to be inspired by your music to make the movie. Which is very rare these days. Very, very rare. I mean, at times of Morricone and Sergio Leone, I think they had a little bit of that. But they have this relationship, and that was wonderful. I mean, I was involved in Inception as well, and I remember reading this at the beginning when we were writing on Inception. I mean, we just got the script and maybe just like 1 minute of the movie, and from that, just like, go write. And you know, a lot of brilliant things were created, and then he would take those things and use it himself in order to do the cutting, which is a very healthy way of being. And then I remember it was so fascinating as well, just watching the first version of Inception at Christopher Nolan's house, which was very inspiring as well. It was just Christopher, his wife, and Hans and I, and he had this marvelous house and a lovely, but a family house. The kids were running around drinking lemonade. We were sitting around drinking lemonade. And as part of the house, there are the cutting rooms, and there are people like cutting and editing. So it's amazing, very inspiring. Christopher managed to combine a very healthy, normal family life at the same time as working on multi-million dollar Hollywood movies, all from his home. So... in a way that's partly what I try to do as well with my things from my home in Vienna, where I'm based.
And let's talk about Salzburg. What's so special for you being here at this conference?
Well, Matthias, who is running the conference, and he has become a very dear friend through the years, because he is so nice, so supportive, and at the same time so forward-thinking. Very much like Karajan himself was, actually, you know, thinking ahead of the times. And you can feel that. Yeah, I believe everything you go to and everything you experience is very much to do with the people who are at the top. So, for example, when you go to a restaurant, everything, you know, the owner of the restaurant together with the cook and whatever, all the staff, everything is affected by that. So even the business, you know, if the person who runs something is nice, the people who are going to be working for them mostly are nice. And this is, you know, Matthias is such a nice and kind person. So it feels great to be here. It feels very, very kind, but very, very exciting. Of course, there's many wonderful startups, including my own Music Traveler. And I think it's a lot of it's fun as well, because you have performances. We're going to perform as well with Hyunki Ju at 5 o'clock today. And it's a really healthy and good mix. It's a good place to be.
And good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Not at all.